Chapter 6, Mark -16.44.12. At the orbital watchtower, server of instrumentation Ul Kehal Hest communes with the new sphere. The code is speaking. It is gabbling. The pleats of his floor-length mechanicum robes are so crisp he looks as if he has been carved by stonemasons. He stands at the summit of a watchtower that is similarly straight and slender. The tower casts its shadow across Calchas Fortalice, the armoured citadel that faces Numenous City across the glittering width of the Boros. It is a cauldron of walls and castellated towers, a city in its own right, but a place of defence, a lifeguard set to stand at the shoulder of Numenous and protect it from harm. 10,000 people work in the watchtower, and another 50,000 function in the gun towers and administration buildings around it. It is alert, a sentient place, its noospheric architecture designed on Hest's forge world, Konor, and supported by technologies supplied directly from the fabricatories of Mars. The watchtower's command deck is vast and bustling with staff. Windows, their blast shutters raised, gaze out across the river and the city to one side and out towards the lowlands on the other. Hest can imagine the traffic at the starport, the dust raised by marshalling on the plains, the bright land and storm-tinted sky, but he is not interested in the view. The tower supports its own manifold field and is inloading data to him and the other seniors at a rate equivalent to the noospheric broadcast of 800 battle titans. 60 moderati of the highest quality, working in amniotic armour glass caskets set into the deck, help to cushion that flow and parse it for comprehension. From this deck, from this summit, Hest can issue, by means of a simple code command across his permanent MIU link, the order to commit the planet's weapon grid. 250,000 surface-based weapon stations, including silo launchers and automated plasma ordnance, plus tower and turret guns, field stations, polar weapon pits. He can activate the immense void shield systems that umbrella Kalth's principal habitation centres. He can bring online the 962 orbital platforms, which include outward-facing protection systems and surface-aiming interdiction networks. Furthermore, he can harness and coordinate any and all available forces on the ground and any fleet composition assembling at high anchor or in the shipyards. Which means that today, because of the conjunction, Server Hest has immediate personal control over more firepower than Warmaster Horus, or, it's conceivable, the Emperor himself. This consideration does not impress Server Hest or fill him with anxiety. Hest is aware, however, that Magos Mir Idvatoran is reading his elevated adrenal levels. Toran is young and efficient, tall, fully modified. She has excelled in her advancement through the developmental levels of the Mechanicum and is profoundly good at her work. She supervises the Analyticae. Hest is fond of her. He seldom accesses his emotions, but on the rare occasions that he decides to use them, he always notices the warmth with which he perceives her. Her modifications are technically pleasing, and her base organics possess a certain aesthetic. "You are running hot," she blurts to him in binaric code, a microsecond transmission on the intimate direct mode. It is non-verbal, but the blurt contains code signifiers for Hest and for a Titan battle unit straining its drives. "Not at all. Rumination. Today is simply demanding." Toran nods. She is ghosting his overwatch. He is aware of her presence in the manifold at his shoulder, just as she is standing next to him on the deck in the flesh sphere. Her fingers are trembling, touching invisible keys, coordinating data via the subtle haptics. Today's difficulty is not shooting at things. With two fleets in conjunction, traffic density above Kalth is singularly high. Virtually all of it is moving according to non-standard or adjusted traffic patterns, extraordinary situational shifts of movement, course and proximity that are not coded into the regular watch registers. This is a one-time thing, for one day only. Their responsibility is the safe and assured orchestration of a vast armada. Kalth's weapons grid has multiple redundancies and stratified forms of cross-check and authorization. It cannot be abused or used in error by any single individual, not Hest, not the 40 other servers in the Watchtower, not the 6,278 Magi and Adepts stationed planet-wide, or the garrison commanders of the army, or the local divisions. Nothing can happen without his personal consent. Every time a ship arrives or moves or passes another or joins formation or enters a yard or docks or begins to refuel or begins a sunward circuit to certify its drives, an alarm sounds. Every non-standard motion or manoeuvre, system activates the grid, and Hest has to reject a firing query. It's actually the most superb test and demonstration of Kalth's grid, but it is becoming tiresome. From the summit of the Watchtower, Server Hest controls the effective firepower of a major fleet, that firepower distributed across the surface and orbit. The system is hypersensitive, so that nothing can take it by surprise and secure an advantage. Every non-standard movement triggers an automatic firing solution from the grid, which Hest has to personally reject in discretionary mode. He's currently getting between 18 and 25 a second. Torin knows that standard Mechanicum operating practice under such conditions, as advised by both the Forge Masters of Konor and the Exalted Elders of Mars, is to temporarily bypass the multinodal automatics of the grid's alert processors and, for the duration of the fleet manoeuvres, transfer approval control to the automatic stations. Let the sentient machines of the platforms shoulder the burden. Let them cross-check the constant inload of data. Let them verify the anchorage codes and the traffic registration marks. She also knows that Hest is a determined individual who takes great pride in his work and in his duties as a server. Kalth's planetary grid is optimized to run on multinodal automatics, with a server or servers supplying final approval of all operations. To switch out to automatics alone is to admit the weakness of the flesh brain. It is to resort to machine alone rather than bioengine synthesis. It is to acknowledge the limits of man and to submit to the clinical efficiency of cold code. They have discussed this. They have even discussed it using flesh voices and vocal cords, unplugged. Hest has the purest vision of the Mechanicum's dream, and she adores him for it. It is not, as so many of the unmodified in society believe, the adoration of the machine. It is the use of the machine to extend humanity. It is apotheosis through synthesis. To stand back and allow the machines to do the work is disgusting to Hest. He probably finds the concept more abhorrent than an unmodified human would. "It's not an admission of failure, you know," she blurts. She is resuming a conversation they were having 2 days before, as if no intervening time had elapsed. He acknowledges the fact, recognizing the conversational marker appended to her code that reopens his saved file of that exchange. "It is, in fact, a practice recommended by Mars." Hest nods. "If we build systems we cannot run, what is the point of building them? Tell me where that leads, Magos Torin."
"The annihilation of self. The abnegation of sentience."
"Exactly," says Hest. His use of flesh voice surprises her, but she instantly realizes that he has switched from binaric in order to make a symbolic point. This amuses her, and she shows him that she is amused by using a facial expression. "You think this is about my pride, don't you, Mir?" he asks. She shrugs. Like him, she is still, simultaneously, making subtle haptic gestures and scouring the Noosphere's data flow.
"I think that no one, not even an adept of the rank server or above, has ever run an operation like this on discretionary mode alone. I think you're attempting some kind of record, or trying to win a medal, or trying to rupture a major organ."
Her voice is clean, as pure as code. He sometimes wishes she would use it more. "It is simply a question of security and efficiency," he says. "The grid is designed to be multinodal. That is its strength. It has no single heart, no single brain. It is global. Take out any point, even this watchtower, even me, and any other ranking server or Magos can take over. The grid will adjust and recognize the discretion of the next in line. This tower could topple, and a server on the far side of the planet would instantly take over. Multinodal redundancy is a perfect system.
You cannot kill anything that has no center. So, I prefer not to weaken the integrity of this planet's defense system even slightly by opting out of discretion and transferring approval oversight to the orbital engines. This conjunction is expected to continue for another day or two, she remarks. When would you like me to take over from you? Before or after you stroke out and tumble to the floor? Torin realizes he isn't listening. He has become preoccupied with the inload. What is it? She asks. Scrap code. Any complex information system will produce scrap code as a result of internal degradation. She knows that. She wonders what he means and peers into the manifold. She sees the scrap code, dull amber threads of diseased information buried in the mass of healthy data. There is 2% more of it than any Analytica projection has calculated for the Kalth New Sphere, even under the irregular circumstances of the day. That is an unacceptable margin. Filtration isn't clearing it. I don't know where it's coming from. He has reverted to binaric blurt. There is no time for words. Mark, -15.02.48. Kryol Faust has been given a blade, but it proves impractical to use it. He uses his sidearm instead. The oblators need to be killed cleanly and quickly. There isn't time to fool about with a knife. Outside the shelter, his appointed officers are rousing the men in song. Chanting fills the air. They have been encouraged to bring vials and katars, tambours, pipes, horns and bells. It is supposed to sound like a celebration. The eve of battle, honoured allies, the anticipation of glory, all of that nonsense. It is supposed to sound joyous. And it does. But Faust can hear the ritual theme inside the noisy singing. He can hear it because he knows it's buried there. Old words. Words that were old before humans learned to speak. Potent words. You can set them to any tune, to the verse and chorus of an army battle reel. They work just the same. The singing is loud. It's quite a commotion. 6,000 men in this corner of the muster fields alone, loud enough to drown out his shots. He pulls the trigger. The matte grey autopistol barks, bucks in his hand, and slams a single round through the temple it's pressed against. Blood and tissue spray splashing his jacket. The kneeling man flops sideways as if the weight of his punctured head is pulling him down. There's a whiff of physoline in the air, a smell of powdered blood, burned flesh, and blood vapour. Faust looks down at the man he has just shot and murmurs a blessing, the sort one might offer to a traveller embarking on a long and difficult voyage. His mercy almost came too late that time. The man's eyes had begun to melt. Faust nods, and two of his appointed officers step forward to drag the body aside. Now the corpses of 7 oblators lie on the ground sheet spread out to one side. The next man steps up, stone-faced, unfazed at the prospect of imminent death. Faust embraces him and kisses his cheeks and lips. Then he steps back. The man, like the 7 who have come before him, knows what to do. He is prepared. He has stripped down to his undershirt and breeches. He has given everything else away, even his boots. The Brotherhood of the Knife uses whatever equipment it can gather or forage. Hauberks, body armour, ballistic cloth, sometimes a little chain mesh. There's usually a coat or cloak or robe over the top to keep out the weather, always dark grey or black. With no more need for any field gear, the man has given away his good coat, his gloves, and his armour to those who can use them later. His weapons, too. He's holding his bottle. In his case, it's a blue glass drinking bottle with a stoppered cap. His oblation floats inside it. The man before him used a canteen, the man before that a hydration pack from a Medicaid kit. He opens it and pours the water out through his fingers so the slip of paper inside is carried out into his palm. The moment it's out of suspension in the hydrolytic fluid, the moment it comes into contact with the air, it starts to warm up. The edges begin to smoulder. The man drops the bottle, steps forward and kneels in front of the voxcaster. The keypad is ready. He looks at the slip of paper, shivering as he reads the characters inscribed upon it. A thin wisp of white smoke is beginning to curl off the edge of the slip. His hand trembling, the man begins to enter the word into the caster's pad, one letter at a time. It is a name. Like the seven that have been typed in before, it can be written in human letters. It can be written in any language system, just as it can be sung to any tune. Kreyol Faust is a very intelligent man. He is one of a very few members of the Brotherhood who have actively come looking for this moment. He was born and raised on Terra to an affluent family of merchants and pursued their interests into the stars. He'd always been hungry for something. He thought it was wealth and success. Then he thought it was learning. Then he realized that learning was just another mechanism for the acquisition of power. He'd been living on Mars when he was approached and recruited by the Cognitae. At least, that's what they thought they'd done. Faust knew about the Cognitae. He'd made a particular study of occult orders, secret societies, hermetic cabals of mysteries and guarded thought. Most of them were old, Strife Age or earlier. Most were myths, and most of the remainder, charlatans. He'd come to Mars looking for the Illuminated, but they turned out to be a complete fabrication. The Cognitae, however, actually existed. He asked too many questions and toured data vendors looking for too many restricted works. He made them notice him. If the Cognitae had ever been a real order, these men were not it. At best, they were some distant bastard cousin of the true bloodline. But they knew things he did not, and he was content to learn from them and tolerate their theatrical rituals and pompous rites of secrecy. 10 months later, in possession of several priceless volumes of transgressive thought that had previously been the property of the Cognitae, Faust took passage rimwards. The Cognitae did not pursue him to recover their property because he had made sure that they would not be capable of doing so. The bodies, dumped into the heat vent of a hive reactor at Corata Mons, were never recovered. Faust went out into the interdicted sectors where the Great Crusade was still being waged, away from the safety of compliant systems. He headed for the Holy Worlds, where the majestic 17th Legion, the Word-Bearers, were actively recruiting volunteer armies from the conquered systems. Faust was especially intrigued by the Word-Bearers. He was intrigued by their singular vision. Though they were one of the 18, one of the Legiones Astartes, and thus a core part of the Imperium's infrastructure, they alone seemed to exhibit a spiritual zeal. The Imperial truth was, in Faust's opinion, a lie. The Palace of Terra doggedly enforced a vision of the galaxy that was rational and pragmatic, yet any fool could see that the Emperor relied upon aspects of reality that were decidedly unrational. The mind gifted, for example, the Empyrean. Only the Word-Bearers seemed to acknowledge that these things were more than just useful anomalies. They were proof of a greater and denied mystery. They were evidence of some transcendent reality beyond reality, of some divinity, perhaps. All of the Legiones Astartes were founded on unshakable faith, but only the Word-Bearers placed their belief in the divine. They worshipped the Emperor as an aspect of some greater power. Faust agreed with them in every detail, except one. The universe contained beings worthy of adoration and worship. The Emperor, for all his ability, simply wasn't one of them. On Zwanan, in the Vale of Aquair, a holy world still dark with the smoke of Word-Bearer's compliance, Kreyol Faust joined the Brotherhood of the Knife and began his service to the 17th Primarch. He was able. He had been educated on Terra. He was no heathen backworlder, energized by crude fanaticism. He rose quickly from rank and file to appointed officer, from that to overseer, from that to his current position as a confided lieutenant. The name for this is Magir. His sponsor and superior is a Word-Bearer's legionary called Arun Zen, and through him, Faust has been honored with several private audiences with Argel Tal of the Gal Vorbach. He has attended ministries and listened to Argel Tal speak. Zen has given Faust his ritual blade. It is an athame blessed by the Dark Apostles. It is the most beautiful thing he has ever owned. When he holds it in his hand, Byblow gods hiss at him from the shadows. The Brotherhood of the Knife is not so called because it favors blade work in combat. The name is not literal. In the dialect of the holy worlds, the brotherhood is the Ushmita Kaul, the sharp edge by which false reality might be slit and pulled away to reveal God. Faust's attention has wavered. The oblator has finished keying in the eighth name. The slip of paper is burning in his hand. Smoking scads are falling from his fingers. He is shaking, trying not to scream. His eyes have cooked in their sockets. Faust remembers himself. He raises the sidearm to deliver mercy, but its clip is empty. He tosses it away and uses the athame that battle brother Zen gifted him. It is a messier mercy. Eight names are now in the system. Eight names broadcast into the data flow of the Imperial Communications Network. No filter or nospheric barrier will block them or erase them, because they are only composed of regular characters. They are not toxic code. They are not viral data. But once they are inside the system, and especially once they have been read and absorbed by the Mechanicum's noosphere, they will grow. They will become what they are. They will stop being combinations of letters, and they will become meanings. Caustic, infectious, indelible. There are eight of them, the sacred number, the octed. And there can be more. Eight times eight times eightfold eight. Magia Faust steps back, wipes blood from his face, and welcomes the next man up to the Voxcaster with a kiss. Mark minus 14.22.39. Still over 12 hours out of Calf orbit space, the fleet tender Campanile performs a series of course corrections and begins the final phase of its planetary approach.